WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
It's Pie Day and Friday, so it's time to grab a slice of pie and dig into the biggest stories of the week here on the Weekly News Recap.
Sweeping and mass layoffs that are happening at the Department of Education.
Secretary Linda McMahon says the Trump administration plans to shut down the department if it gets approval from Congress.
We're going to move education into the states.
There is a tsunami coming from Washington. It's destruction of a Department of Education because this administration in Washington wants to give huge tax breaks to billionaires.
Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lee Zeldin cut dozens of environmental regulations.
They are taking us back to the 1960s.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. To help us go behind the headlines, we were joined by Axios Chicago reporter Carrie Shepard, Chicago Tribune City Hall reporter Jake Sheridan, and Chicago Sun-Times chief political reporter Tina Svondelis. We saw nearly half the Department of Education get laid off. Tina started us off by talking about what that might mean for us here in Illinois.
Well, it's about 1,300 layoffs. That was on Tuesday. In Chicago, we're hearing at least 50 and that's impacting a civil rights division. More broadly, it seems to be people who are dealing with federal funding for schools and for colleges and the civil rights wing. We do know that Elon Musk is literally inside the Department of Education right now. There's employees there in which they're trying to make programs more efficient. So they want to change the FAFSA line, the financial aid line, that where you talk to a human and you tell them private information about why you need things. And it seems like he wants to make that into a robot AI situation. And you're seeing a lot of cuts based on that. And obviously we have already seen some lawsuits from attorneys general fighting this. So we'll see if this actually lasts.
Yeah. Well, first I want to hear what Governor Pritzker had to say.
I'm for efficiency, too. I think all of us are. The question is, can they deliver those services without the people actually running them and operating them and determining that there needs to be some effectuation of justice in our schools across the country?
And now I want to dig into what you just teased there, Tina. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul also weighed in on the education department cuts. What's he doing?
He's part of a coalition of 21 attorneys general that are suing Democratic attorneys general, suing the Trump administration, basically saying they don't have the authority to do this. They can't dismantle this department, this cabinet agency, and they will be fighting that. And I do think there's a good legal case there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a congressional decision.
Exactly.
Right?
So it would have to be Congress that can dismantle the Department of Education. And what they're trying to do is what we've seen is disruption and making changes. And as we've seen in any company, when there's big changes, it takes a long time to get back going.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever he's doing is disrupting these cabinet agencies, which is what he wants to do.
And Raul's been busy, his office, right? Because, I mean, haven't we been seeing nonstop lawsuits since, January 20th-ish?
Yeah, pretty consistently. He's been teaming up with attorney generals in other sort of Democrat-led states, New York, some Massachusetts, et cetera.
Just fighting against executive order after executive order.
Yeah, exactly. And something that Raul continues to say that I think is important is that DEI is not illegal, like the Trump administration continues to say. And in fact, in some cases, it's required and important. So it's kind of I was kind of laughing to myself when you asked Tina that question. You're like, what's the latest thing Trump is coming at Chicago for? I mean, how can we keep track, right? And so I'm sure that the AG's office is swimming in files and work.
There have been some wins for these lawsuits and federal judges siding against the Trump administration, like the probationary employees that were fired last month. A lot of those jobs are being reinstated. So we're just seeing, exactly. What's today going to bring? Is it more lawsuits? Is it what reinstatement is it today? Of jobs? We just don't know.
It's Friday. What is it today? Well, let's stick with the Department of Education for another moment here, Carrie. Northwestern and Illinois Wesleyan, they're among 60 universities that received warnings from the department. What's going on?
Yeah, these letters from the Department of Education went to 60 different schools, quite a few Big Ten schools as well. In the Midwest, there's also UW-Madison received a letter.
Yale, Stanford,
and of course, Columbia University has been in the crosshairs of the Trump administration. This is stemming from what the administration says was a failure of these schools to protect Jewish students on campuses, especially during the protests in the last couple of years around the war in Gaza, and saying, you know, this is, and going so far as to say that these universities are practicing anti-Semitic behavior. And Northwestern actually was on a short list already of schools that had been targeted by the Department of Justice, a task force that had been assigned to sort of look into policies. And of course,
President Schill last year had to testify.
Yes, exactly. And made it clear. And that was actually stemming from the fact that, you know, he sort of, I think negotiated is too strong of a word, but came up with these policies that they thought would still allow for free speech and free expression. That's what college campuses are very important for, after all. But did implement some rules about, like, you know, no camps on campus overnight, et cetera. Illinois Wesleyan actually as well gave me a statement for my story. And they also had their investigation into it started into allegations of anti-Semitism last year as well. So they told me, we've been complying with all those. We've given all the information they've asked for.
But here we are still getting these letters and these warnings.
Right. Hmm.
Yeah. So Jake, I mean, you've been paying attention to this too. And I know in addition to all of this, yesterday, the Justice Department brought Mayor Johnson into the controversy.
Yeah, they sent Mayor Johnson and mayors of a couple other cities across the country a letter saying, you know, we're watching you guys. You haven't protected these students either. You know, I think the big overarching theme here is they're just throwing spaghetti at a wall and they're seeing what sticks. It's really hard to tell where this might go next. But
This all comes after the arrest of a Columbia University protester, with President Trump posting on Truth Social that it's, quote, the first arrest of many to come. So I want to play a little bit of what Mayor Johnson had to say about Mahmoud Khalil's arrest.
The fact that people are being detained for their political views, that is beyond dangerous and reprehensible. And so I fully support the First Amendment, and people should not be held for their political views, right? That is not the hallmark of our democracy.
What effect, Jake, do you think that this could have on free speech at universities?
You know, I think it's pretty clear that it's going to tighten down what students can do. It's going to prevent protests. It's going to have a chilling effect. I mean, we've already seen universities change rules on protests, rules on diversity and inclusion efforts. The Trump administration is having a huge role in reshaping something that really has not been the purview of the federal government before.
And as you mentioned earlier, Carrie, I mean, they're changing DEI policies and principles because of Trump's threats.
Yeah, I would say maybe they're not so much changing policies and principles yet that we know of. Some schools are complying in advance. Like, to Jake's point, it's a lot of the federal government throwing spaghetti against the wall and forcing institutions to comply in advance. Yeah. But there is, you know, the Daily Northwestern and the Chicago Maroon at the University of Chicago. These are great student papers. They have done reporting, you know, for the last couple of months about websites on both of their universities, sites about pulling down DEI-related language. I just want to follow up also on what Jake said. I would actually maybe disagree a little in that I think it might embolden students a little bit more, right? And I think that's okay. I think that's a good thing. I do also think whomever of these universities complies in advance is going to change future enrollment. I think students are going to feel like I'm maybe not as comfortable going to a school that doesn't value diversity.
You mean after seeing what happened to Khalil?
getting arrested and
what went
down at Columbia?
How universities respond to these threats of DEI and how universities respond to these crackdowns of free speech. I think there are two avenues. You know, institutions can say, no, this is free speech. This is, we're gonna fight for our students. That's who matters here. And then others who are gonna say, okay, we're just gonna give in and we're not going to allow any free expression on our campus. That's gonna affect enrollment in the future.
So I want to turn to budget cuts at the EPA, Tina. What's been happening there?
So they basically cut the Environmental Protection Agency's environmental justice offices across the country. That was hard to say for me. So it's about 20 to 30 people in Chicago, but this is a nationwide situation. So environmental justice, which is making sure that low-income neighborhoods are not disproportionately affected by horrible things like air pollution, leaks, chemical leaks, air pollution, all sorts of things. So it's very meaningful kind of office that protects people that was actually created in Chicago.
Hazel the roots
Johnson.
Are here.
The roots are here and from the 70s. President Bill Clinton created environmental justice as an executive order. Hazel Johnson helped that movement. So it is very impactful here in Chicago where people do need protections. And so we have also seen about 100 people resign or be laid off in Chicago with the EPA last month. A lot of those probationary employees, which may be reinstated. So this is just another step in that.
Goodness, jobs just being slashed left and right. Let's stick with Trump, shall we? He gave an Do we have a choice? He gave an unprecedented boost to Tesla this week. Some Chicagoans, though, they just aren't feeling the love for those electric vehicles, Carrie. What's going on?
Yeah, I started noticing as early as, you know, January, I think, when I would sort of be driving around, I would see these bumper stickers. I don't know if you guys have seen these on Tesla.
No, not
that
yet.
Say anti-Elon Tesla Club, or I bought this before Elon was
a
Doge.
No, yes. No, I have not seen that.
I've seen one that says, I bought this before Elon went crazy.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, people are, I mean, the Tesla stock is trending down a little bit, but I think, to be clear, it had been before January, but now people are, I mean, you know, that's like sort of, you know, you vote with your pocketbook. So people are saying, I'm not going to give money to this company, which this company is already actually fledgling, is struggling a little bit anyway. But last weekend there was a protest at the Tesla dealership in the Gold Coast. And so people are, you know, and then also there's been stories this week of people who have Teslas, their cars being vandalized.
Yes, I did hear that sometimes with graffiti.
Yeah. And I've heard stories of like friends and colleagues I have in DC who say that people's like Cybertrucks have been burned, and you hear that in other cities. Like, you know, this is pretty serious. But Trump, I think, said he was going to buy a Tesla, if I understand correctly. I don't know that he drives.
Definitely giving him a boost. That's for sure.
I really doubt he's driven before.
I know Pritzker has a Rivian. So he's always been anti-Elon.
Yeah.
And an Illinois-made car. Rivian,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
One
of many, I'm sure.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. Do we think Trump has a driver's license?
I wouldn't, to Jake's point, I mean, he grew up in New York City and probably was driven around a lot, so I would doubt it, but I don't know, actually.
Interesting. Well, yeah, on Tuesday, March 11th, reports are saying that Trump purchased a Tesla Model S from Elon Musk. So I guess he'll be driving at some point soon. But, you know, Carrie, you bring up these protests. Of course, more than a dozen police officers were actually deployed to that Tesla dealership on Rush Street over the weekend when hundreds were gathering for this, quote, take down Tesla protest. Jake, I'm curious what you think here. I mean, do you think Mayor Johnson and CPD, are they risking criticism over whether this is an appropriate use of police resources here?
You know, I think it'll kind of depend on what happens if further protests occur. You know, if protesters and police get in some kind of altercation, that could be a mess for the mayor. He was put in a similar position last year with some of the protest pro-Palestine encampments at universities where CPD ultimately decided it had to respond to stuff, but the mayor was really hesitant to try to show any force there because he didn't want to be seen as siding with the people opposed to the protests. So,
yeah. And while last weekend's Tesla protest here in Chicago was peaceful, doesn't look like that's been the case across the country, in other parts of the country, Carrie.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was referencing in terms of like cyber trucks being burned.
Yeah, and I'm hearing about bullet holes in windows
yeah,
too.
Yeah, me too. And I asked the Secretary of State's office for numbers on how many Teslas have been registered, because they keep track of how many electric vehicles in the state and per county are registered, which mm-hmm. is actually really interesting. And how many Teslas have been registered in the last couple months to see if numbers have gone down or not. I'm interested to see the findings on that.
We're still waiting to hear back.
We're still waiting. Yeah, I mean, I think people, this is not new, right? But people feel a little powerless in times of new administrations and regime changes, so to speak. So, you know, you see this with people saying they're going to boycott Target. This was, you know, during Lent, this was an effort started by a black pastor in Atlanta mm-hmm. because of Target, you know, not sticking up for DEI policies. And, you know, I mean, I if you feel like there's nothing you can do, you can at least put your money where your mouth is, I suppose.
Yeah. We'll turn now to an attempt to ban fur in Chicago in city council. Jake filled us in.
So the city council voted down 26-19 an effort to ban the sale on new furs in Chicago. It kind of came up last week. The legislation had been introduced in 2023, but resurfaced, caught a lot of people off guard, really breezed through committee. But the Aldermanic Black Caucus and Alderman Matt O'Shea really led the charge here in striking this down. You know, they argue that furs are, you know, an important part of culture. Mm-hmm. It's about free choice, and it's about defending small businesses. While Alderman Raymond Lopez, the legislation sponsor, said fur clothes are, you know, lead to animal cruelty. But yeah, got struck down.
And
yeah.
He talked about, it was a strange debate. He just talked about how black people like to wear furs to church, and it seemed very accusatory.
Really?
And they shot that down and said, you know, like, this is not about that.
As they should. imagine that, though. A city founded by a fur trader, right, Jean-Baptiste Pointe du Sable, would consider banning fur.
Yeah, and like Jake says, Matt O'Shea in his ward are two big Andriana furs. I appreciated that he sang the jingle that we all know so well. Yes. And grew up with. And Island Furs, and those are big businesses. And it is a touchstone of, you know, you hear that from many people. And I think Alderwoman Stephanie Coleman talked about that, about sort of this is a part of black culture. And, you know, it is very cold in Chicago. But there are, you know, there is a movement, you know, even Canada Goose has said they're not going to buy, in the past few years, they're not going to buy new fur from mm-hmm. traders. So a lot of fur you see now is synthetic. And, you know, some people buy their furs used vintage, which this, to be clear, ordinance wouldn't have gone after.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ray Lopez is a big animal rights guy, right? Yeah. He's had a few, I think, that he's put forward to about.
So no surprises that he's on that side.
It's a little bit of a weird vote, though. I mean, some progressives were with him, and he's one of the most conservative people in the
right,
city council.
Right, yes.
The Black Caucus was together, but really, I mean, you might as well just flipped a coin for just about every other person in the city council. It was a totally unique roll call.
Well, we got some other big news at City Hall this week. Mayor Johnson finally opened the door to the top secret gift room. You took a peek inside, Jake. You got to tell us what was in there.
The Chamber of Secrets.
Were the size 14 men's shoes in there?
They were, and I looked underneath, and I did not see any signs of wear on the shoes. So I looked for that, because I was curious, you know, why did this take so long? One reason I thought is, you know, were they getting all this stuff back to put it in the room? We don't have a clear answer on why it took so long. One thing they said was they had to make the room ADA compliant. They also had to, I think, kind of make it pretty. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was pretty cute in there. The shelves looked good. Stuff was arranged well.
Shoes were nice, I thought. Yeah. I was looking at the size and see if they'd fit my husband.
Hugo Boss cufflinks, Givenchy, Kate Spade handbags. Yeah.
But you know what? Most of the stuff in there, it really wasn't very valuable. And, you know, there was some headline grabbing stuff. I will say, I think the Gucci bag that was in there was fake. I looked at the stitching. I was not
You
impressed.
Heard it here first. Jeez,
the mayor's staff pointed that out, and I got to give it to them. I think they're probably right. But you know, most of the T-shirts, hats, pictures, there were 6 drawings, I think, of the mayor from kids. I have no drawings ever
cute.
Done for me.
That's
so
cute.
Anyone
that's
knows
cute.
What, how do you know it was
something.
Fake, though?
It just looked, it didn't look
it just
Gucci
didn't look.
Quality.
I mean, I've seen like fake Louis
Jake shopping
before.
With me.
One of the C's was missing.
One of the C's. Goosey. Is it true that the public can sign up for 15-minute time slots?
It is true. So I think that's going to be starting pretty soon, and they're going to do that quarterly. And this is a big pivot. You know, the mayor said that the video, the 20-second video, grainy, shaky video that he posted was going to be enough, that was public access. But, you know, they turned the corner after the congressional testimony, after Republicans brought up the gift room. You know, now journalists got in and the public can get in soon.
Yeah. Well, do you think anyone will actually do that, Carrie?
I was just thinking that. I was just going to say, who's doing that besides reporters? I don't know.
We're the nosy ones.
Yeah. I mean, Twitter maybe weirdos. If people are just like very interested in how things work on the fifth floor. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe. Yeah.
Well, we're here because, Tina, this revised gift room policy really comes after the Johnson administration denied access to the inspector general, Deborah Witzberg. So does it seem like the mayor should have just let the IG in the first place?
Yes, absolutely. This is like a basic function that an elected official should be doing. And he created so much more drama for himself. I saw like a Fox News story attacking him on this. And it's a bad look for him. All elected officials should have an inventory of this. It creates a lot of problems. I know Pritzker gets tequila every year. People send him bottles and other things. Every elected official gets something like this. You have to categorize it. You have to be transparent about this.
Mm. Yeah. While there's been a lot of attention on City Hall's gift room, what has actually flown under the radar is that the City Council's Immigration Committee has not met for 8 months, despite all that's happening right now. Block Club Chicago actually did a deep dive, some great reporting into how the committee promised to meet monthly, yet they met only 4 times in 2024. So we're going to keep an eye on that and hopefully do some more coverage in next week or so on Reset. I want to switch gears, though, because there were a couple of frightening shootings that made headlines this week as well, Carrie. First up, a 25-year-old man shot outside of Terminal 2 at O'Hare on Wednesday.
Yeah, I was confused about this because I thought, well, how did they have a gun at the airport? But it turns out they got off a flight, I think from Houston at like after midnight, and some sort of disagreement brawl started in baggage claim. I mean, baggage claim can be stressful, but yes. And, I mean, this was more serious than that. And then I guess when they went outside of Terminal 2, there was a quote unquote gun car. So they called a car that actually had the guns. And this is when the shooting took place. Mm. And
so the altercation went from inside to outside.
Yeah. And something I think Tina's and your colleague Frank Main brought up in his article was that they're not at the airport for some reason. They're not license plate readers, which are important for CPD's investigations. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure why there are not. I don't know the rules on that. But
something with the technology and
yeah. So that's going to hinder
what's happening with airplanes at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's what's slowing things down. There was also a shooting outside a Streeterville movie theater. Jake, do we have details on that incident?
Yeah, a lot of the details are coming from Alderman Brian Hopkins there, who is really sensitive anytime violence occurs in that area. So a tourist was hit by a stray bullet after what Hopkins said was a group of around 50 teens got into a fight. They had been, I guess, hanging out inside the movie theater. They went outside and a fight broke out. And he's
goodness
also
gracious.
Yeah, he's also calling for a curfew now. He's called for it before. He did this last year. Chicago has a 10 p.m. curfew that was put in place by Mayor Lori Lightfoot and kept by Brandon Johnson. Hopkins wants it 2 hours earlier. The shooting occurred at 8:15. So, I guess police would have had to act really quickly if that would have had any effect here. But the mayor seems pretty opposed to this. So we'll see where that goes next. Hopkins is going to try to get it up for a vote.
I'm just terrified to step outside my door at this point. Like, I can't be in an airport. I can't just like get off my flight and get to my ride and get home or get to my hotel. And I can't be at the movies, or I can't have my teens go and hang out at the movies because something may go down. Like, what's happening here?
I don't have the answers. I don't know that politicians or policymakers do either. I mean, I would say that the answers they have, and I agree with, is there are too many guns, and that's, you know,
too
it's
many
a
guns.
Deep issue and cycle. A curfew for Mayor Brandon Johnson is a no-go. He's going to keep diverting to the fact that teens need jobs.
Well, the teen curfew issue comes up often, especially as we approach the summertime.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a perennial story that all of us have covered every single summer. Usually the hot weekend is Memorial Day weekend. And, you know, it is terrifying for this tourist. She said she was across the street with her son. They were visiting from, I think, Connecticut. and she saw feathers kind of come out of her coat, and that's because the bullet hit her coat.
Oh.
And the doubt, you know. And these are the stories that, and it is, it's tragic, it's scary, but these are the stories that embolden Fox News and other places for people who never come here. And
yeah.
Republicans on the congressional panel calling Chicago Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
and that is just, we all live here. This is not the reality. This is not what goes on all the time.
Correct.
This is
yeah.
one of the wealthiest neighborhoods in the city right yeah. there. Brian Hopkins Ward is one of the wealthiest.
It's just the randomness of it all is what's throwing me off.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's very concerning. It's very concerning of, I mean, you know, where these kids go and where they're going to meet. And, you know, that movie theater there on Illinois, just on the street from here, has been a problem spot for years.
Yeah.
And so people in the neighborhood have kind of wanted to shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carrie, you mentioned that, you know, some politicians that like Mayor Johnson have said that guns are the issue. The other thing you said is that crime is down. And I think that is an
right.
important part of this story, too.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's a journalist or a politician in Chicago who doesn't think that gun violence is a huge issue in this city. But it is important to contextualize, you know, some of these hot stories, I think, with the fact that shootings are down in
yeah.
the city. The homicides are down this year. And you know, is it enough? No, but
again, when it starts to get into these random fluke
yeah.
locations, that's when
Absolutely.
My eyes start to sort of perk up. Like,
yeah, but and then the other side of that would be like, let's not forget that this is happening in plenty of neighborhoods all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
And like let's pay attention to that too. But like to Jake's point, the mayor hit that repeatedly when he was in Washington. Look, violence is down. Violence is down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does need to be contextualized.
For sure. One more city council story, Jake. Any update on who Mayor Johnson might choose as alderman for the 35th Ward to replace Carlos Ramirez Rosa, who's now
yeah.
going to head up the Park District?
Yeah, so there is a committee to pick an alderman, but there is a really clear front runner, and that is Cook County Commissioner Anthony Cazada. He is a dyed-in-the-wool progressive, a lot like Ramirez Rosa. Ramirez Rosa has been a mentor to him. They kind of came up in that ward office and in the same kind of progressive neighborhood organization as well. So he's a clear front runner. He's got the main neighborhood political group's blessing. And, you know, I think all signs point to him.
Mm-hmm. How about we take a detour down to Springfield?
Yay. I mean that. I'm always interested in
Yes.
Tina,
let's go down to the Capitol, Tina.
Coverage.
So first up, Tina, lawmakers, they're considering legislation that's going to change rules, or it would, if passed, change the rules around homeschooling.
Yes. So advocates for homeschooling were outside the Capitol yesterday in a huge rally. They typically have been fighting legislation that would regulate homeschooling in Illinois by bringing a cherry pie to legislators, a homemade cherry pie, which I think is a great tactic. I would definitely eat that.
That's literal, not a metaphor.
What? Yes.
Like, what?
Yes. You mean like an actual cherry pie?
Okay. And that has helped to thwart bills every year, but there actually is a proposal that might go somewhere. I'm staring at a map of the country in which there's regulations in other states. We do not have one. There are several states that have low regulation, medium regulation. New York is high regulation, which I learned from a Law and Order SVU episode. New York, Pennsylvania, and Massachusetts have high regulation. So that would mean that the parents are being checked up on. They have to follow a curriculum.
So what is there, just no oversight here in Illinois?
There is no oversight here. They are just trusting that these people are teaching their kids. There's not an approved curriculum.
What?
And the reason that they're hitting this right now is because of truancy after the pandemic, where the kids were not coming back to school and maybe the parents couldn't take them or whatever the issue was. So they're trying to kind of go after that to ensure that the kids are actually being homeschooled.
Yeah.
Tina's article is fascinating. Everyone needs to read this. I had no idea either. And I'm definitely going to steal her idea and write
Check
about it
out.
Next week.
Sometimes.com.
But like, you don't even, I guess like parents and guardians don't even need a GED, like a high school diploma to teach. Right.
Which there's no requirements.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And homeschooling has gotten really popular across the country in the last few
I think
years.
Definitely post COVID. Yeah.
Well, for sure. That's for sure.
And also because, you know, some people don't like vaccine requirements to go to school.
That was a thing.
Yep.
Yeah. So Native Americans were in Springfield this week, Tina. They were there to support a bill that's impacting them. What are the details?
You know, I did not follow that one, Sasha.
Well, there's a bill now to prevent Illinois schools from using native mascots or logos. So we've seen that happen as
far
as
my high school.
Sports
teams. My high school had a really inappropriate name that was recently changed to Indians.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And I was on the dance team and I had to have that emblazoned on my sweatshirt. Is inappropriate.
Oh, wow. So your high school should be on this list then.
My high school has since changed it.
I'm
just going to call out Lamont. And it's now the Indians.
Yeah.
But think of another horrible version.
Wow. Yeah, and this has gone on for a long time also at University of Illinois. Down in Champaign, U of I has Chief Alinewick. And this is since I was a kid. I remember going to games and, you know, there would be counter-protesters of Save the Chief. And but, you know, there just was in the last couple of years that they just required Illinois, in addition to including LGBTQ plus curriculum, also Native American history curriculum in state schools. So, you know, these were people saying this is, and this is like an ongoing thing you see with sports teams as well. So it does seem appropriate that, you know, it's schools where there are maybe Native kids that are feeling, you know, sort of, you know, prejudiced against because of this.
I was still in Washington when all the transition happened for the football team there. So, Democratic lawmakers are pushing the state to buy produce from Illinois farmers. Can you tell us more about that, Tina?
Yes. So as we're seeing cuts in other ways with the USDA and local produce, there's a new bill and there's a new advocacy groups trying to get the state to buy local food and produce for public facilities. So that would be a way to help them out during this strange time in our country. So less than 5% of the food consumed in Illinois comes from local farms, but 75% comes from the state. So where it's going elsewhere. And so this would be a way to help those farmers and to get the produce out.
Yeah, it's coming on the heels of the USDA cutting funding, though, for a program that helped Illinois schools buy food from local farmers.
Yes. So this is one of the many, many cuts that we're seeing, or money not. Either this program was actually canceled, but we're still waiting for that $1.88 billion from last year that has been withheld of federal funds, and that is building every month. So Illinois is just reporting, hey, we are not getting money for this program. We have a grant, or we're part of this federal program. It's either canceled or it's being withheld. So we are seeing a lot of this happen with the USDA and with food-related things.
One last Springfield story. Rapper Snoop Dogg, he's coming to the to the state fair in August. Why aren't you looking at me like
this
that?
This is a big deal.
Yeah.
This is a big deal.
He's everywhere.
He raised eyebrows in January when he performed at Donald Trump's inauguration. Remember that? A lot of people had things to say, and they pulled up the receipts from years and years ago when he, you know, called out others who performed and took part in Trump's first inauguration. And so, you know, he kind of left a sour taste in people's mouths 2 months ago. And so what do you think is the reception that he'll get in Springfield?
Well, they have really good guests since Pritzker took office. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to give him too much credit, but he's got awesome people to play at the Illinois State Fair.
Absolutely.
He really has.
So the lineup
is great. Like, I always go to at least one or two, and it's a very good price. It's a 3.5 hour drive. You can see Alanis Morissette last year. Come on.
Like there's another big country singer that's performing this year. Maybe Luke Bryan. Is that
there's right? always like a big time country star.
And that might do better in Springfield.
People do travel. But think about people are not just coming from Chicago. They're coming from downstate Illinois, Central Illinois, Peoria, wherever. So
I mean, Snoop's got that appeal anyway. He's popular. He's in every commercial. He's everywhere.
And
he's
after just, the Olympics,
He's doing beer commercials. Yeah. He's hanging with Martha Stewart. He's doing it all.
Right.
Sheryl Crow's on that list too.
That's another one.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, then I might go.
There's quite a, I mean, there's a variety.
Yeah. Up next, a jury awarded a record-breaking $120 million to two men for wrongful convictions. Here's Jake.
So two men who were accused and convicted of a 2003 murder before they were exonerated in 2019 got a $120 million deal from the jury. That's $60 million each. That's a massive amount of money for the city of Chicago. You know, I'm not even sure if the city's insurance can really cover that. I'm really curious if we're maxing out our insurance at this point. But, you know, these settlements, they get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
and there
they're
are
coming
a lot of cases
one after
coming
the other.
Down the line, too.
Yeah.
A lot of these kind of corrupt, super corrupt detectives and their cases coming. But these two men, John Fulton and Anthony Mitchell, they were there was little evidence in their case, and they alleged that there was a coerced confession that put them behind bars. So That's what happened there.
$120 million. Another settlement was reached with a protester who had her tooth knocked out by a Chicago police officer.
Yeah. $3 million total in settlements this week in the city council, including several for police misconduct and especially rules or chases, car chases that went against police rules. But Miracle Boyd, who is an activist with Good Kids, Mad City, she got a settlement related to getting punched by a cop at a 2020 protest, the protest in Grant Park at the Columbus statue. She was filming an officer. The officer punched her phone, came back and hit her in the face so hard that it knocked her one of her front teeth out. And she was awarded that money. You know, there was some pushback from alders who are often, you know, very pro-police and pro-police union, but this passed pretty easily in the city council.
Let's turn to something very different, Carrie. Workers at the Field Museum, they were picketing outside the building on Wednesday. What was that about?
Yeah, they are, anyone who's been in a union, this is familiar for them, that they are still without a contract. We hear these stories all the time that almost a year and a half into negotiations, where we hear this the most is with the Chicago Teachers Union, of course, with CPS. And they still don't have their first union contract. And that's
a year and a half into negotiations.
Yeah. Wow. And that's, they're part of AFSCME, which is a huge union here. And, you know, the Field Museum, the Shed, this has been, we've been seeing this in the last few years. The Art Institute, several museums, museum workers have moved to unionize to get, you know, better work hours, maybe better, something consistently usually with union negotiations is like clear job descriptions.
Yeah.
So they are, they were picketing because they say they are still without a contract and want visitors who come to the museum to know that. Yeah, and
they
to see
say
that.
Management's refusing to offer fair wages.
Yeah, that's a, yeah.
That's,
I mean,
a
that's a,
it?
That's a, yeah, I was just saying, yes, that's a common, common issue with union negotiations.
We've seen this before. There's just a wave of unionization efforts right now is definitely what you're trying to say there.
Yeah, but also the, I would also say the pushback is still very strong as well. We just saw that Starbucks workers were being arrested. I mean, there's still the like
that's
Starbucks union that, you know, we're still seeing that across the country as well.
Mm-hmm. We've also got a new first in the nation Real ID Supercenter. It opened in the Loop this week. Carrie, what should we know?
Supercenter.
I know, right? Sounds like a grocery store.
It really does. The Real ID deadline is fast approaching. May 27th or
May 7th. May 7th.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. May 7th. I wrote about this like, you know, a month or so ago because when I was in LaGuardia, New York, coming back, a TSA worker handed me this little pamphlet and said like, get your Real ID. And I was like, oh, it's actually happening this time because this has been like, you know, starts and stops of this for years.
Mm-hmm.
And the Secretary Alexi Giannoulias, the Secretary of State's office, is saying this is going to make it easier for people. People sort of, when they feel like they learn they have to go to the DMV for something, they're probably going to put it off. But the Secretary of State's website also is super helpful, I would say. There's a checklist to figure out if you actually have to get one.
Correct.
So go check that out as well.
Yeah.
And these are, the Supercenter is for walk-ins. So thinking just, you know, people who are downtown for work or whatnot can run in and get
but
it.
But also just do it. Just get the Real ID, people.
Just do it. Well, like, here's...
You're going to need it.
Here's the man himself. Here's Giannoulias. He was on the show earlier this week. You know, he said, you know, folks are freaking out. There are deadlines and such. But, like, here's what he had to say.
If you have a valid driver's license, you don't need a Real ID to drive a vehicle. If you have a valid state ID, that is a proper form of identification, even without a Real ID. And you don't need a Real ID to vote. So we're seeing folks flock to our facilities, gobble up appointments, wait in line, and throw our system into disarray.
Hence opening the Supercenter.
Yeah, which is an appropriate response, I think.
People are trying to get other things done at the DMV and can't even get an appointment slot because, you know, of all the people trying to get this Real ID.
Yeah, and they do have on their website, they do have sites that in the neighborhood DMV sites that are, you know, shouldn't be strictly for Real ID, but also then ones that are strictly for taking your driver's test and your license renewed.
So tell me, do you all have Real IDs yet? I mean, Tina, you sound like a...
2020.
Oh, you got it in 2020.
You're on it.
I can look out from my window at City Hall and see the line that stretches at the Secretary of State's.
Oh, wow.
It's gotten shorter, which is good if you're a mayoral hopeful. like the Secretary of State might be. A lot of people are speculating that he is, right? So, you know, trying to cater to Chicago.
It's really not that hard, guys.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. My colleague did it, and it was very quick. I have not done it.
I think I did it for flying purposes, which because they kept saying that you needed it, and they kept extending the deadline. So that's the reason I got it in 2020.
And you don't always want to carry your passport if you're flying domestically because, you know, you could lose it or whatever. So you do need it to fly domestically.
But I do want to make it crystal clear that it's, you know, May 7th comes and you're not going to, you know,
implode.
Right, exactly. Ooh. You can still function.
I mean,
without it.
I'm hesitant to even say that just because who knows what the TSA is going to do. You know what I mean? Like, but yes, you can function.
I'm taking
of
the
course.
Words from Mr. Janulius himself.
Absolutely. But I mean, don't procrastinate, as Tina's saying.
Yes.
But like, they, you know, I would say, you know, just be safe, better safe than sorry, as your mom says.
There you go. You know, sometimes we like to touch on stories about the media.
Yeah.
In the recap. And Jake, I know that you found it notable that Mayor Johnson tweeted out an AI-generated article. So I want you to tell us more about what exactly happened there and then talk about your concerns.
Yeah. So the mayor was sharing what I think he thinks is some good news, you know, announcing summer jobs for youth, expanding and opening the application portal. And he shared an article from Hoodline, which is an outlet, an online outlet, that includes on its bylines a little AI tag. The Nieman Lab, a journalism think tank and an outlet that covers media, you know, they say that this outlet often makes up names for authors, includes, quote, straight up hallucinations in their work. And the result in this article that the mayor shared on his political Twitter is an article that looks almost identical to the press release he shared. You know, there were local journalists who wrote stories about this. You know, I don't really know why he chose to share this one, but you know, he might as well have posted a press release.
I was just gonna say, so you think he might as well have just posted the actual City Hall press release rather than trusting this unreliable source?
Yeah.
Do you think that's misleading to the public, Tina?
I do. I do think it's good that it's being labeled. As you said, there's like an AI kind of filter thing or things that you see on social media accounts.
Yeah, it's right on the byline, right?
Yeah.
That's at least one good thing. But I do think he needs to think about that in terms of what media is undergoing right now. I have friends who use it for business emails and things like that. I have a hair person who made me write a text because she was going to do an AI text. And so I said, just please give me the information and I will write you the text. So I do think it's like cutting off some brain activities and people should just write themselves.
Carrie, I mean, what are the journalistic ethics issues that you think are raised here?
Well, the ethics issues is always with any misinformation that is being spread and that is not. I mean, in this case, it doesn't sound like it was so much misinformation, just not reporting. If it was just a press release, which we as journalists use all the time, we just we fact check it and verify. There are, to Tina's point, there are AI is not all evil. There are good uses for it, but I would say as journalists, it is ingrained in us because of our, you know, our integrity, and you should always fact check that.
Right.
They are pulling it from the internet and sometimes, and that's actually a real term, hallucinations. Like that's actually the term you use for when AI just makes something up.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. So it's just a hallucination they come up with. And sometimes often they will pull articles and information that's dated. So you have to check that as well.
We do have a fellowship with our own newsroom with Microsoft's and OpenAI. So like we are looking for ways to explore AI in a ethical way that newsrooms can use. So that does exist.
Same. Yeah. It's just begun for us. GPT.
Yeah. Just begun for us. Our fellow just started this week. Mark, and welcome. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. It'll be interesting. And I
also use an app for transcription too, which is AI.
Yes. Same.
And it does you a summary and it's pretty good. I would never use that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of freaky to see like, wow, this robot has written this paragraph.
The point
for
is
me.
You still have to go behind it and check every single thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I think what's missing here is the critical touch that journalists provide, and you know, it's worth pointing out, journalism jobs are under attack, and it's hard to stay in this industry. Outlets in Chicago are struggling, so you know, I think it's really important that we all understand the importance of the workers behind this work.
Yeah. Well, I want to turn, while we have a couple of minutes here, to some lighter topics and even some good news. North Suburban Highland Park resident Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins is trying something new with some of the band's classics. What's going on, Carrie? I got to look at you for this one.
Madame Zuzu's he owns in Highland Park with his wife. Yeah, this is Lyric Opera announced their 2025-26 season, and it includes the world premiere of a opera by, of course, the Smashing Pumpkins, legendary, not just Chicago band, they are legendary from the 90s, of their album, double album, A Night of Melancholy and Infinite Sadness. And he has composed it. And this is, you know, this is going to be at the Lyric, I believe. Forgive me, I have to look at my story.
I would like to go to this.
This is in fall, but the tickets go on sale in April, and those will get snatched
up. I mean, day one.
Every Gen Xer is going to flock to this. And so this is, and I would say also Lyric has some other great, they have some other great shows, and also Goodman Theater just announced recently their lineup, and they also have some really fascinating, great stuff. So to Steppenwolf, I mean, all this to remind us the rich cultural scene that Chicago is so good. And this is a place that people want.
Meanwhile, my kids await the Tuesday Lala lineup drop.
Of course, of course. So, yes.
Here's some good news. A Southside pastor is responding to the high cost of eggs. He's passing out free eggs to residents. Volunteers are joining the Reverend Charlie Dates, who heads up Progressive Baptist in Bridgeport and Salem Baptist in Pullman. They're going to all get together tomorrow and distribute cartons of eggs at Southside locations. We've got all that information up online about this effort at WBEZ.org. You know what else is going on tomorrow?
St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, the parades and the festivities. Axios, I know, just published a list of the best places to celebrate.
Yeah.
What'd you come up with?
Well, our intrepid social media host, Moyo, is, God bless her, she is going down into the fray downtown and is going to cruise on one of the river cruises while, you know, the
awesome.
To see the, you know, the, obviously the river will be green, but you also get like drinks and corned beef sandwiches and all that stuff.
Okay.
But there's stuff in, if you want to avoid downtown, which I think probably some of us do, you know, just you, there's plenty of stuff in the neighborhoods going on.
Sweet.
And so, and non St. Patrick's Day related as well. Slow Mo is a really well-known queer dance party that's going on at Sleeping Village in Avondale.
That's right, yes.
There's you don't have to
you don't have to be all up in it, but you can be in it.
I would say I'm going to see The Fugitive, classic Chicago film, tonight at Facets.
Harrison Ford?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Andrew Davis is gonna
You're bringing
director,
me back.
Come on, this is a classic. And they one of the most iconic scenes is they actually filmed during the St. Patrick's Day parade.
That's
that was
awesome.
Actually happening, and Harrison Ford's weaving through it, and gosh, I love it.
I love it. We'll leave it there. Well, happy St. Patty's Day to all of you.
You too.
That is it for our weekly news recap. My thanks to Carrie Shepherd of Axios, Tina Spondelis of the Chicago Sun-Times, and Jake Sheridan of the Tribune.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guffman. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Micah Yasin. Every Friday, Reset brings you the news you need to know in under an hour. If you want more Reset throughout the week, sign up for our newsletter. It comes out on Mondays and Fridays, and you can subscribe at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Have a good weekend. Thanks for listening.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.